Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion of politics as if the people mattered. I'm David Swanson. President Obama spoke recently to veterans of foreign wars. The media reported on the Obama-Romney struggle to win the pro-war veteran vote and to have rich people, or poor people, pay for more wars. What a choice. This week on Talk Nation Radio, I'm speaking with the president of a different kind of veterans group, Veterans for Peace.
Our mission statement overall is to end war. That's what we want to do. We think that veterans have a special credibility or a qualification maybe that to speak about the real costs and consequences of war and militarism that the average person doesn't have. It's very difficult to dismiss the voice of a veteran, especially a combat veteran, if we are speaking against war and militarism.
President Obama is not expected to appear at the upcoming convention of Veterans for Peace, although Alice Walker, Phil Donahue, Roy Bourgeois, and many, many others will be there, and the convention is open to the public.
This year it will be in Miami, and we are really trying to take advantage of the location of the convention this year to focus on Latin America and the Caribbean.
I am thrilled to have as a guest on Talk Nation Radio this week, Leah Bolger, who is the president and the first ever female president of the wonderful anti-war pro-peace organization, Veterans for Peace. Leah Bolger has been a member of the U.S. military and seen something of our empire, serving in the military in Iceland, Bermuda, Japan, and Tunisia, as well as having been a military fellow at MIT for a year. She now has a better job than any of those as the president of Veterans for Peace, and it's a great pleasure to welcome you to Talk Nation Radio. Leah Bolger.
It's my pleasure to be here, David. Thank you for that nice introduction.
So for those who are not familiar with the peace movement and one of the best, most consistent and creative organizations within it, what is Veterans for Peace? How long has it been around and where did it come from?
Well, Veterans for Peace was organized in 1985 by a couple named Jerry and Judy Benicio from Maine. They had traveled to Nicaragua as members of a delegation for Witness for Peace. And they came back to their hometown, and they were giving a presentation on the trip to Nicaragua, and someone in their audience spoke with them afterwards, and they got this idea to create a organization that would, in Jerry's words, kind of bridge the communities between, bridge the veterans community and the peace community. And when he meant veterans community, he was really talking more about Vietnam veterans, which Jerry was. And so it was created in 1985 in Maine. It has developed over the years we have about now 150 chapters across the U.S., in every state except Nebraska and South Dakota. We have three chapters in Alaska, for heaven's sake, but they're everywhere. And we also have a new group in the UK that's just formed, and we have a group in Vietnam. We're looking at expanding maybe to the Philippines. There's a lot of interest around the world in Veterans for Peace, and I'm thrilled that it's growing as rapidly as it is. We have a structure that enables the chapters to kind of operate autonomously and to work on projects that are of interest to their chapters. And our mission statement is to end war. That's what we want to do. We think that veterans have a special credibility or a qualification maybe that to speak about the real costs and consequences of war and militarism that the average person doesn't have. So it's very difficult to dismiss the voice of a veteran, when especially a combat veteran, if we are speaking against war and militarism. So the organization really serves as a vehicle to amplify the voice of veterans. We speak in schools, we speak in front of civic clubs, we speak at protests and demonstrations, we lobby, we visit the elected officials, we do letter writing campaigns, we do all kinds of projects to enlighten the public about the real cost of what our country is doing in our name. We are recognized by the United Nations as a non-governmental organization. We have an official NGO status at the UN, and we are a 501c3 nonprofit. So any donation made to Veterans for Peace is tax deductible. Our website, where you can find out more about our statement of purpose and all the work that we're doing all over the country and around the world, is veteransforpeace.org. And we'd love to have people check it out and think about, you know, read the statement of purpose and see if it resonates with you. And even if you are not a veteran, as you know, David, because you're one of our wonderful associate members, you can join Veterans for Peace even if you're not a veteran as an associate member, notably yourself, Medea Benjamin, Ralph Nader are all associate members of Veterans for Peace. And we really value the work that the associates do in support of the veteran members and helping to amplify our voices. So please check it out. We'd love to have you join us.
Leah Bolger is the president of Veterans for Peace, and this is David Swanson. I certainly am a proud associate member. There is no really equivalent people against war or people for peace. So as a non-veteran and a non-woman, I certainly join Veterans for Peace and Code Pink and every peace group out there. And Veterans for Peace, I should make full disclosure. I've done paid work for Veterans for Peace, and I am proud to be an associate member. But I say that it is the best peace group I'm aware of because it is, because its members are at every event and organizing new ones and starting and pushing campaigns, and because it has that mission that you mentioned, Leah, of wanting to end war, to which the usual response these days in this country, at least, is which war? Because surely you can't mean ending war. War has become so normalized. How do you respond to the accusation that you're just going too far in proposing that we not have any wars?
Well, it may seem preposterous to Americans because of our country's policies over the years, which have always been aggressive and imperialistic. But it's not a preposterous idea to people living in other parts of the world, some of whom have never gone to war. So it's a huge problem for Americans to get their hands around because the way we're brought up, the way we are raised, the way we are inured to violence and militarism, and to think of war as the first option instead of the very, very last option. It's going to take a long time to change the mindset of the American people. But we have to keep working on this because it absolutely has, you know, obvious to everyone who's been in combat, and even those who haven't, that war is futile. It only creates more violence, and it does nothing to benefit anyone except line the pockets of the war profiteers. So some of the most notable military figures in our nation's history have talked about its utility. Eisenhower called it futile and stupid. General Smedley Butler called it a racket and kind of lamented his participation in it. People with that have seen it and seen it firsthand and have been a part of it know what a waste it is. And so we have to keep amplifying these voices of veterans who can tell the story, can speak out. We have to support people who resist the military, who resist and rebel and confront the system, support them, help lift their voices, So this is our niche, and this is what we have to do. And it may seem crazy, it may seem far-fetched, but another point I wanted to make is the one that you've made in your book when war was outlawed. Is that the name of it?
When the world outlawed war.
Yes. When our own country passed legislation with the Kellogg-Briand Act that said that war was illegal. So it didn't seem crazy then, but we've forgotten about it because the profit element, the military-industrial complex that Eisenhower warned us about over 50 years ago has just become such a monstrosity that I don't know if we can effectively chip away at it just in our own country. I think we have to, and I'm looking at ways to do this now with interaction with other international organizations. I don't think, personally, the American people can put enough pressure on our own government to investigate its own war crimes. And the wars that we're involved in now are certainly violations of international law and, the Geneva Conventions, the Nuremberg Principles, the UN Charter. Over and over again, we are violating international law, but we're not signatories to or participants in the International Criminal Court because we know that we are culpable. And so I think maybe what we need to do is help foreign governments and foreign international organizations who have been harmed by American policies, help them organize in protest against the United States, and impose sanctions on us and levy charges against us, bring lawsuits against us. I was just speaking with Medea Benjamin about this idea that, I saw recently that the families of the Americans who were killed by American drones are suing the Department of Defense. And I asked Medea, what about the idea of foreign governments suing the United States government for the wrongful deaths of their citizens by drones? And she said that Pakistan is doing that. So I really think maybe this is where we need to go as a peace movement to try to put real pressure on the United States government through outside forces, because we as citizens are virtually impotent. We don't have the power that we are supposed to have. We don't have the representation that we're supposed to have. And so I'm thinking and I'm trying to think of ways that we can really bring some pressure to bear on our own government. And I'd be interested in what you have to say about that.
Well, this is why I like Veterans for Peace, because it doesn't shy away from any possible path to peace or justice, including working with foreign governments, as many of us worked with the Spanish government to try to urge prosecutions of U.S. torturers and so forth. When our own system is broken, why not work with our international allies? But I know that Veterans for Peace has an annual national convention coming up. I recall there was one several years ago now in Texas from which Cindy Sheehan and some Veterans for Peace members headed off to George W. Bush's ranch at Crawford and began a protest that made a great deal of news and changed many minds. And there have been a number of great Veterans for Peace conventions since. And we're speaking here as President Obama has just recently been at the Veterans of Foreign Wars Convention, which appears to be something of the antithesis of Veterans for Peace, as President Obama makes the argument that the Democrats will require that the billionaires pay a little bit more for the wars, while the Republicans will make working people pay for the wars. And, outside of those two alternatives is the whole concept of not having quite as many wars. So I'm interested in what the message will be coming out of the Veterans for Peace Convention, and where and when and how can people participate?
Sure. Yes, we have been having conventions now for 27 years. Our organization's 28 years old, so we've been having an annual one ever since we were formed. And this year it will be in Miami. And we are really trying to take advantage of the location of the convention this year to focus on Latin America and the Caribbean, a part of the world that we don't, you know, when we think about war and peace issues, generally the public thinks about Middle East and Iraq and, you know, Afghanistan and these kinds of areas in Asia. But we don't really think about Latin America. But Letters to Peace has a long history, as I mentioned, you know, the Genesee is going to Nicaragua. So we've had done a lot of work in Latin American countries throughout the years. Brian Wilson was a member of a peace action team in Nicaragua in the 80s. So this year we're going to be really focusing on many different countries in Latin America and the Caribbean. We have speakers, expert speakers from several of those countries. And we're going to try to not ignore the other issues that Veterans for Peace talks about through workshops and plenaries and keynote speakers of post-traumatic stress disorder and Agent Orange and ending wars in the different regions. But there will be a focus on Latin America this year. And if people are interested, it's going to be in the Miami Marriott in Biscayne Bay. And the dates of the convention are the 8th through the 12th of August. You can register online via our website, veteransforpeace.org. And the full cost of the convention, if you wanted to attend our banquet, which includes keynote speakers Alice Walker, Pulitzer Prize-winning author Alice Walker, and wonderful humanitarian and activist. She was on the boat to Gaza, the last boat. And Father Roy Bourgeois will be keynote speakers. The cost is, I think, $125. I'm misquoting that. But we have offered a day rate to come and participate in the workshop for $25. And we will not turn anyone away. If you can't afford the $25 to come and enjoy wonderful expert speakers from around the world for whatever you can pay. So I hope that anybody within, you know, driving distance of Miami will check that out. I think it's really going to be very, very worthwhile.
Well, I am certainly looking forward to it myself and to conducting a workshop together with Sandy Davies, who's the author of a great book on Iraq and a wonderful speaker on issues of war and peace. So, you know, for those interested in getting educated as well as engaged in issues of war and peace, I think this is the kind of event not to be missed, whether or not you are a veteran. I'm not a veteran, but I'm proud to be part of Veterans for Peace. I wanted to talk, Leah, in the context of recent news, and this is, of course, something that comes back to us again year after year after year, about the size and shape of our military budget in the United States, which the House of Representatives has, of course, again, just put through. People are under the widespread impression, number one, that the military budget is being cut dramatically, and number two, that doing so throws everyone out of work because the military budget is essentially a jobs program with perhaps some undesirable side effects that we shouldn't pay too much attention to. What are your thoughts about where we are headed in terms of the spending of our tax dollars?
Well, this is an issue that really gets me fired up, and it makes me so angry because it's a perfect illustration of all the things that are wrong with our government. You know, we don't, as you said, we're under the widespread impression that it's being cut. Well, why is that? Because the big military industrial complex machine also includes the media and Congress and corporations and banking. And so everything that we hear is filtered through the lens of corporate media, and they don't want us to understand what's really happening, that we spend more on the military and wars than the rest of the world combined, that we spend more than half of every tax dollar on war and militarism while spending only a fraction of that on healthcare and education. So it's a problem of us not knowing the truth, and it's a problem of not being able to influence the people who make the decisions, because we have no power, because we have no money. And so this, I often describe this as this huge knot of a big problem where you've got the Supreme Court and with the Citizens United ruling saying that money is speech and there's, unlimited amounts of money can be donated to campaigns. You've got the problem of whoever spends the most money on campaigns wins. So we need public, campaign financing. We need a massive reform in how elections are run. We need public control of the airwaves. We need our representatives to truly represent us. The American people have been speaking out loudly and clearly for years about what our priorities are. And I often quote Marion Wright Edelman, who said, we don't have a money problem in America. We have a values and priorities problem. And, the values and priorities, and it's not values and priorities of the American people. The American people have been saying for years and years what their priorities are, and Congress is not listening to American people. They are listening to the big corporate interests who pay them the big money. There is a survey, a scientific survey that has been done every year since 1973 by the National Opinion Research Center at the University of Chicago. And the top two priorities of the American people for their spending priorities are healthcare and education. One and two, two and one. These have been the top two by far since they've done the polling. And then next comes assistance to the poor, the environment, social security, dealing with drug addiction, halting crime, nothing to do with war and killing and military. And then way down the line, at number 18 out of 22 categories, is defense spending. And I put defense in quotes because, as everyone knows, our military spending is not defensive. It is offensive, and it is illegal. So this is an abomination to what the American people want. We want our money spent on our values and to match our values and priorities, which is helping poor people, education, healthcare, housing, jobs. This is what we want. And when Congress ignores us, then we have to find ways to be heard, and really, sometimes we have to go outside the acceptable methods of speaking out. Letters to the editor are not working, and emails to our congresspeople don't seem to be working. And so we have to really step it up. And we have to be in the streets. We have to be sitting in their offices. And we really need, until we can revamp the system and have a truly representative government, we're going to have to really push the one we've got to listen to us and to pay attention to us. So it's going to take a lot of work. But this is an issue that we cannot ignore because it will just ruin us as a people if it isn't already too late.
Leah, I in the few minutes we have left, I want you to recount something that happened last fall when you and I and many others were occupying Washington, D.C. And of course, just this month, the House of Representatives has brushed aside the requirement imposed on itself a year ago that it establish some minimal cuts to the military budget. But last fall, this so-called Super Congress, the Super Committee, was trying trying to work out some sort of deal to get around that, and failed. And as far as I know, there's only one person in the country who got in a room with the super committee and told them what the supermajority of Americans were saying in the polls and what the Occupy movement was saying in the streets, and I don't think they were too happy to hear it. And that, of course, was you, Leah Bulger, the president of Veterans for Peace. What happened back in October?
Well, that's right. I interrupted the last of the three public hearings that the super committee had. I like to call the super secret committee, because even my own congressman was not allowed access to their hearings and their deliberations, although 250 registered paid lobbyists had direct access to these 12 members of Congress. And in fact, I was the only citizen to testify in front of the super committee, albeit it didn't go on the congressional record, I don't believe. Although my comments were recorded by C-SPAN and played over and over again, to illustrate what the American people really want, and that's simply what I said, that the American people want you to end the wars and tax the rich, and that's how we solve the deficit, and that's what we chant in the streets, and it's an easy two-step program to end the multi-trillion dollar deficit that we have, and it's easy and it's obvious, and there's no reason that we should have to cut any of the programs that help people, like Social Security, Medicaid, Medicare, those kinds of programs. It's absurd that those should be cut so that we can spend more money on the military. So, yes, I interrupted. I spoke for a total of 52 seconds from the time I began to the time I was taken out of the room by the police. I was arrested. I pled guilty at a hearing in April. And I think the judge was fairly sympathetic to me, because he did not impose a very severe punishment at all. He gave me 60 days jail time to suspend all of that. He gave me a 20 hours of community service, but no fine. And he did not grant the request from the government to prohibit me from stepping foot on the grounds of Capitol Hill. The judge said, no, I believe Ms. Bulger should have access to her government. So I think that was a huge victory. And he did not prohibit me from participating in government. So we have to do things that are maybe a little bit scary. And I admit I was nervous. I was very, very. It was very scary standing up and walking up there. But I am so glad I did it. I know I spoke on behalf of the majority of American people, and I would do it again 100 times over.
And it was an example that you set, Leah, for other members of Veterans for Peace and the rest of us around the country. Leah Bulger is the president of Veterans for Peace, a wonderful organization. Their convention is coming up in Miami, Florida. You can check them out at veteransforpeace.org. Leah, thanks for being on Talk Nation Radio.
It was my pleasure, David. Thank you.
This is Talk Nation Radio. I'm David Swanson. Talk Nation Radio is produced in Charlottesville, Virginia, engineered by Christiane Brown in Reno, Nevada, and syndicated by Pacifica Network. Until next time.